This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of December the 3rd, 2018. I'm Mason King. Indianapolis began to break free of its reputation as Indianoplace in the late 1970s when city officials masterminded a campaign to hitch Indy's wagon to sports, amateur, professional, and international. Now, fast forward to today, the city boasts three of the most admired sports venues in the country: Lucas Oil Stadium, Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and Victory Field. Now, along with the recently expanded Indiana Convention Center, another vital cog in the city's sports and tourism strategy, they're owned by a public corporation called the Capital Improvement Board, and they're funded in large part through a complex web of hospitality and targeted property taxes, some established in cooperation with the state. Now, some people think it's a fantastic team effort to boost Central Indiana. Others are very critical of using taxes and fees to help support teams owned by multi-billionaires like Jim Irsay of the Colts and Herb Simon of the Pacers. In the legislative session that begins next month, the Capital Improvement Board, along with other city, tourism, and sports officials, are going to test the legislature's appetite for approving more revenue for the CIB. To help finance a recently announced plan for a $120 million expansion of the convention center, they'll be asking for another $8 million per year. But they also want to strike while the iron is hot and engineer a long-term funding plan for the CIB sports facilities to make sure they stay up to date and shipshape. IBJ recently uncovered this effort, and it's our lead story in the paper this week. Okay, to unpack the story, we have a platoon of IBJ reporters in the podcast studio. Haley Colombo covers city government. Hey, Haley.
Hey, Mason. Hey.
Lindsay Aridoti covers state government and politics. Welcome back.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
And Anthony Shutley has covered sports and tourism for IBJ for two decades, give or take. Sir, how are you doing?
Very good. Thank you.
Great. Now, the story is a little complex, so I want to start quickly with some concrete landmarks everybody knows. Lucas Oil Stadium, right? Home of the Indianapolis Colts. Bankers Life Fieldhouse, home of the Indiana Pacers. Victory Field, home of the Indianapolis Indians, AAA baseball team, and the Indiana Convention Center, home to some pretty mediocre coffee. All four are owned by something called the Capital Improvement Board, which we heretofore will call the CIB. It's a municipal corporation that just means a local governing body created by the state many years ago that's responsible for funding and maintaining these public facilities. So when we talk about the Pacers leasing the field house, that lease is with the CIB. When we talk about the recently proposed $120 million expansion to the convention center, the CIB is responsible for financing that. Now, where does the CIB's money come from?
The CIB's money mainly comes from the state of Indiana, through a litany of taxes that are, or tax revenue that is directed to them.
So the idea behind those taxes is that they come from visitors who support it, right? Through restaurants, rental car, all those sorts of visitor taxes, if you will. Allegedly, most of the taxes are not supposed to come from local residents, more over people who use the facilities than pay for it.
Okay. Yeah, so it's your sales tax, your income tax from those specific facilities that you just mentioned, that is going to the CIB as well through what's called the Professional Sports Development Area.
Okay. So let's jump right into the lead story this week. So Haley, what is the headline? What is the big news then with the CIB?
The CIB is going to go to the legislature in January when it starts its budget writing session to essentially ask the legislature for more money to fund CIB operations for sort of the long haul, as well as provide more funds to do some pretty big improvements, pretty expensive improvements to entities like Bankers Life Fieldhouse. The CIB is doing this year because they have this aforementioned, and we were here on the podcast a few weeks ago talking about the Pan Am Plaza project.
And that project is the $120 million part of it, where they create an expansion of the convention center. You have a big ballroom, a big sort of group facility. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Am I getting this right, that at least initially they would need about $8 million a year just to help pay for that part of it?
Yes. So that is pretty much the bare minimum So we actually don't know yet how much money they're actually seeking. Okay, that is something that they haven't taken the lid off of yet. However, we do know that they will seek at least $8 million. So the CIB is funded in part through this $8 million sort of pass-through revenue. That revenue is going to be redirected to pay down the bonds on that Pan Am Convention Center expansion. So the state will be asked to essentially backfill that. But it's not just going to be an $8 million ask.
Yeah, and right. And state lawmakers that I talked to said that they haven't been told a dollar figure amount yet either.
There is something that they're combining with this ask, and it's sort of like a long-term vision for all the CIB facilities. Is that right?
That is our understanding, that they want to essentially put forward a long-term vision on the funds that they'll need to avoid having to keep coming back to the legislature year after year to ask for more money.
What they're asking for is the ability to raise more money through these different taxing vehicles. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say so. I don't think, from my understanding, the CIB is going to be too picky about where the money comes from. They just want the money. So I think state lawmakers will have a little bit more of a say in that, and they're considering a few different ideas, and it seems like the one that could be the easiest way to get approval of it would be to go through future revenue that the state wouldn't be giving up current dollars, but would be looking at saying, okay, you can have this future money, which I can explain more if you want.
Go ahead. What is future money?
So back to that professional sports development area that I mentioned. That area, it kind of acts like a state level tax increment financing district. So it captures certain revenue, and that goes directly to the CIB that would otherwise go to the state. And so this has been in place for more than 20 years now, but the CIB is capped at how much it can receive from that PSDA, and only certain properties are included in it, like Bankers Life, Lucas Oil, there's a few hotels. So the option that they could be looking at is increasing what is in that zone, if you will, and then capturing taxes from those new areas, like, for instance, the hotels at Pan Am Plaza. So that would give them that future revenue that the state's not seeing right now anyways.
There are a couple other potential financing options that are on the table. There's also some excise taxes that Anthony mentioned previously that are those auto rental taxes, the admissions taxes, the Marion County food and beverage taxes, and some of those taxes, and that is like a very substantial amount of the CIB's revenue. Some of those taxes are set to sunset in 9 years at the end of 2027. You could extend the life of those taxes and keep redirecting that money to the CIB. Another sort of along the lines of what Lindsay was talking about with the PSDA, yet another option is to raise the caps.
But raising the caps, I think, might have the least support, because that would be taking away current state dollars.
Excuse me. Right, that overflow money that normally
going to the state, yes, would then go to the CIB instead. And it doesn't sound like there's going to be much of an appetite for that, especially since lawmakers are expecting a tight budget.
So before we get even deeper into the weeds here, for the people who are just kind of grazing along here, floating along, tell them, why is this a big deal?
You know, the CIB controls a great amount of real estate downtown. We've talked about Lucas Oil Stadium. We've talked about Bankers Life Fieldhouse. The Convention Center, Victory Field, is in there. So it's kind of a strange dance the CIB does with the state, and it's a little bit unusual. But the bottom line is, it's a great deal of real estate, and it's an enormous economic impact that those venues drive. So the city decided a long time ago, in the early to mid 1980s, to get into the sports business. And the thing about the sports business is, while it does bring in a great deal of revenue, it also costs a great deal of money. You're going to see that in pretty short order with Bankers Life Fieldhouse. It cost $183 million to build that thing, and it potentially could cost that much to upgrade it where the Pacers, and moreover Pacer Sports and Entertainment, need it to be. You know, we just, I guess it was 10 years ago now, dropped $750 million on the football venue, and that's going to need an overhaul too. So this organization has spent a lot of money. This organization is responsible for hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars in real estate, and they're going to need a lot more money to keep that going. So there are a lot of watchdogs out there who are eager to keep an eye on this, rightfully so, and it's going to continue to be a big issue as we go down the line.
Well, and to Anthony's point, like we've talked about on this podcast before, tourism is a huge industry in Indianapolis, and this all kind of goes back to tourism, the people who come here for the conventions, people who come here for Colts games, Pacers games, whatever it may be. And I think that's why, you know, people are talking about it, and there could be enough support to do something with this, at least to discuss it more, because no one wants to see that go away. No one wants to see Indianapolis back when downtown wasn't doing very well, back when people weren't coming to downtown.
So pardon the horrible pun, but why wouldn't this be a slam dunk? Doesn't everyone in the legislature just agree that the health of our public facilities and sports team is vital to the interests of the state?
Lawmakers who are from the far corners of the state have a hard time going back to their constituents and saying, we gave money to this downtown Indianapolis project. You know, they're going to question, well, why? Why are you doing that? Why are you spending state dollars on that? And they need to have a good answer. So what the CIB is going to have to show is that investing in these entities isn't just good for the city of Indianapolis, it's good for the entire state.
So here's part of the rub on that financial aspect of it. You know, there are plenty of people, having covered the sports business for 20 years, that people come out of the woodwork to complain about giving money to the Pacers and the Colts. And it's not about those organizations. I mean, a lot of people love those organizations. A lot of downtown restaurateurs and hoteliers love the economic impact it drives. The rub is more emotional, really, and the rub is the fact that people object to giving money to very, very wealthy individuals. Herb Simon controls the Indiana Pacers. Jim Irsay controls the Indianapolis Colts. They're high-profile individuals. They're Fortune 500 guys, and it's unseemly to a lot of people to be handing over, you know, tax revenue from middle-class people, working-class people, as well as higher upper-class people, right, to these multi-billionaires. That's the rub. That is essentially the rub. Now, you can argue that it's emotional more than economical, but still, it causes a lot of friction, and I think it will continue to do so going forward.
There's another sort of elephant in the room in this discussion, which is the fact that the Pacers don't have a long-term deal to stay in Indianapolis. So Herb Simon has talked about the fact that he wants to stay in Indianapolis, but he's also said that he wants substantial improvements to Bankers Life Fieldhouse. If the CIB gets money that would help it make those substantial improvements to Bankers Life Fieldhouse, it increases its chances of being able to land a long-term deal to keep the Pacers here. That's another sort of element of this discussion, which I feel like people are sort of reticent to talk about, but is a very powerful sort of element of this, especially because the Pacers have employed a very influential former state lawmaker to help lobby on their behalf, who is former state senator Luke Kenley, the former budget writer.
Right. So they're not really sort of disinterested, ambivalent players in this. The Pacers are definitely interested in pushing this interest that they have in creating some sort of undetermined amount of money that would help make Bankers Life Fieldhouse a better place.
Absolutely.
And this isn't the first time the Pacers have gone to the State House. As you remember, when they were wanting their deal, which over the long term paid them $16 million a year to refurbish and upgrade the field house, they sent a rather large contingency, including Rick Fuson, who's now the president of the operation, over to the State House on multiple occasions to lobby. And now, obviously, they're formalizing that and they're bringing in more heavy artillery. The hire of Luke Kenley doesn't surprise me because it's a well-worn page out of the Pacers' playbook in bringing what I would consider relatively beloved individuals into their fold. Remember, it wasn't too long ago that they were mired down all kinds of muck and had a horrible reputation following the Malice in the Palace, the brawl in Detroit, and they brought in Jim Morris, who is another, you know, beloved figure in many circles, to kind of do likewise. And now they're bringing in Luke Kenley to do it at the State House.
Yeah. Let me just back up real quick. So the way I understand it, the Colts have a long-term lease in Lucas Oil Stadium. So is that right? Like, how far does that go?
That's correct. It goes through 2037. Although if they're not in the top five NFL teams for gross revenue, then they can terminate the contract in 2030. But at the very least, you're looking at the Colts being here until 2030.
Which they won't be. They will not be. So they will have the opportunity to terminate in 2030. Seems like a long time, but it's not as long as it might appear.
Okay.
There's no way the Colts will be that high in revenue.
But the Pacers have really had kind of a piecemeal approach to their lease over the years. And it was just 4 years ago when I think, as you mentioned, that they signed a 10-year lease, I think with 3 one-year extensions. And everybody, I think, at the time thought, oh, this is great. We finally took care of the Pacers problem. But now it seems like maybe we're back here and trying to sweeten the deal a little bit.
So, you know, speaking of elephants in the room, you know, Herb Simon is in his mid-80s, and nobody likes to talk about their own death, myself included. But, you know, you have to believe behind the scenes that there's some estate planning going on, well, has been going on for a number of years, and there's an exit strategy written up. And the fact is that Herb Simon wants desperately to keep the team within the Simon family. Herb's son, Stephen, may take over the team. Stephen is based out of California, and he does spend some time here. But the fact that the Pacers could change ownership hands, I think, has no small part in this and the planning to kind of keep financing rolling in, because they're not always going to have a sugar daddy in the form of Herb Simon or anyone at the Simon family necessarily to be there. So they have to make sure this operation is self-sustaining going forward.
So I was at Bankers Life last week to see the Utah game, and like, this place looks great. What else is there to do over there?
It is still considered one of the finest venues in the NBA, but it's starting to be a little more nostalgic than filled with the real types of amenities that NBA venues are filled with. To kind of get a point of view of the sorts of things that the Pacers could be looking for in Bankers Life Fieldhouse, the Atlanta Hawks just sunk $192 million into their arena, and they've added things that are really hardly imagined or imaginable here. The place has a barber shop. The place has the NBA's first courtside club. It has movable walls between suites. So, you know, suite holders may want to remove those walls and network with one another, create more party atmospheres. They considered putting a swimming pool in that facility, which they didn't in the final analysis. But the point is, the NBA is very much looking toward broader uses of their venues, not only for basketball. And Bankers Life Fieldhouse has had some struggles in that respect, in terms of drawing in concerts and being the right type of venue for this event and that. They've done a pretty good job, but it's been a challenge. And now they're looking to massively renovate that space, not only for basketball, but for other events with amenities and features that, quite frankly, have not been seen in this market before.
Well, and I think what Haley and I heard in doing this story is that they're looking for the future. They don't want to just sit there and say, okay, well, the space is great right now. We're good. We don't need to do anything. They're trying to be ahead of the game.
We mean the city and the convention leaders, as well as the teams.
Yes.
So what indications do we have so far that state lawmakers would support this?
Well, the Senate's budget writer, the senator who has replaced Luke Kenley in that role, Ryan Mishler. Senator Mishler, I spoke to him for this story, and he's been working with city leaders and the CIB on this and asking them questions. And so he's not out there saying, yes, this is going to have support, but it is certainly something they're exploring. It's something they're willing to discuss. It's something that top lawmakers are aware is going to come up in the session.
It sounds like at this point, no one has explicitly told us no, that it does not have any support at all.
No one has told us no, and no one has told us yes. But I think part of the problem is that they don't know where the revenue would come from yet. And that is what it's going to come down to for a lot of lawmakers.
Well, it sounds like they don't know how much they're asking for.
That too.
Right.
Yeah. So there's big unknowns that are going to change people's minds. So I think that's why it's hard for them to come down one way or the other on this right now. But there does seem to be support for wanting to keep Indianapolis tourism vibrant.
Right. Would this necessarily need to happen in this session, or is this something that could roll over?
They're going now because they have an urgency on the Pan Am deal, and that like gives them sort of an urgent reason to be at the State House and want something to happen this year.
I think since this year is a budget year, it makes sense. They're already looking at the numbers and what the state has in revenue. But this item doesn't necessarily have to be part of the budget. It could be a separate bill. So we'll see what happens.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My thanks again to Haley, Lindsay, and Anthony. Hey, before you get on with your week, I want to draw your attention to another major story in this week's paper. Apartment rent is on the rise in Indianapolis, thanks in large part to the area's boom in new multifamily developments and updates to old ones. Despite the explosion in new units downtown, rents are still the highest in the Indianapolis area, more than $1,500 on average for a two-bedroom unit. IBJ's Mickey Shuey takes a deep dive into the apartment market's dynamics. You can read all about it in this week's paper or, of course, online at IBJ.com. Hey, as always, thanks for checking out the podcast. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.